to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, El Ariel. Welcome, welcome. This is our first podcast of spring 2018, so happy spring to all of you. I hope you're enjoying some warmer spring weather. If it is still snowing where you are, my condolences, but I promise you that it's going to get better. Warmer weather is on its way, and we are at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We are also on all the streaming platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. And if you are on those streaming platforms and you see those pretty little stars, if you can give us a shout out, give us some love, give us a rating, feedback, whatever you want to do, just so we can move up in the rankings, we can get more notice, more people can discover us, because we're all about helping people figure out how to get started in music, how to find a career in music, what's the state of the music industry today, how do you make money today in music, what kind of careers are out there. We're all about that. So if you can spread the word, help some people out, we would most appreciate it. So my last guest on the program was the amazing, incredible Naima Cochran. She is a music marketing guru. She's worked at Bad Boy, Arista, Columbia, Epic. She's working right now with John Legend, and she's also the creator founder of Music Sermon, hashtag Music Sermon on Twitter and MusicSermon.com. She's basically a musicologist and archivist, and she's highlighting the underappreciated and often overlooked artist songs and subgenres of urban music. It's got a cult following. I urge you to check it out. This week, my guest is Travis Holcomb. He is a radio DJ spinning underground, electronic grooves, well, basically whatever he feels like playing from 10 p.m. to midnight, weeknights at KCRW. For those of you who don't know, KCRW is a community service radio station out of Santa Monica College and is internationally known and followed by millions around the globe for its music programming and music discovery. Chances are that your favorite artist or band, when they were just starting out, played at KCRW, and they continue to give a voice and launch the careers of future stars. So before we kick things off with me bugging Travis all about his childhood and his DJ career, let's get started with a track that's one of Travis's favorites, I Just Gotta Get Down by Curtis Green. Hey, how'd you get that music job? Really, really thrilled you could be here with us today.
Happy to be here, Ariel. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's start off with childhood, the best place to start. Tell me about the kind of household you grew up with, like in terms of music. What kind of music were you exposed to?
My parents met in a discotheque in Japan. So that's where the pre-story started. Mm-hmm. So my dad was always kind of interested in music. By the time I was born, he was a copier salesman, but he still had a big record collection. Mm-hmm. And one of the first songs that I remember really connecting to, which this will date me a little bit, but it was the Hall & Oates song, Man Eater.
Love it.
And yeah, every time that song would come on somewhere, I would get all fired up and start dancing around. And it was, my parents got a lot of entertainment out of that, I guess, whenever they just needed a laugh, they just put that song on. But so that's one of the first songs I remember connecting to. And obviously, like growing up in the 80s, Michael Jackson, Prince, all that stuff was always around. So yeah, I would say that would be where it started. I mean, I don't know that I was in a more, whenever you hear people talk about their childhood, everyone always says they had a musical childhood. I don't know that mine was any more musical than anyone else's, but it was definitely a part of it.
Did you start taking lessons or anything like that, like show an interest in music?
No, not really. I grew up mostly in apartments, so it was, and I always did want to do band, but it was always a thing where there was just nowhere to practice.
Mm.
So I didn't really do anything musical, I guess, in school. Finally, when I was around 15 years old, I started getting into this radio show. I grew up in Atlanta, and there was a radio show on the Georgia Tech student-run station called The Breaks, and it was on from 10 to midnight every Wednesday night. And this is like 94, 95-ish. He was kind of my first exposure to sort of underground electronic music. And at the time, it was like DJ Shadow and drum and bass music from the Metalheads or DJ Hype and all this stuff that I had no idea existed. Because probably up until that time, most of my music knowledge came from MTV. So if it wasn't on MTV, I just didn't really hear it. This is before the internet was what it is now. So
right.
You couldn't just go online and lose yourself in a YouTube suggestion hole or anything like that. So he was really like the one that put me onto all this great underground hip hop and electronic music. And that really is what set me off on wanting to become a DJ, partly because a lot of this stuff you couldn't even buy on CD. Like, you had to get it on vinyl or else you just weren't going to hear it. I worked all summer at Barnes & Noble one year and saved up enough money to get my first DJ set up then.
That's a hell of an inspiration just from one show. How did you find it? Was it on the FM dial? Like, was it?
Yeah, it was. It was 91.1.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had in Atlanta, we have really good radios. We had really good radio stations. There was also the Georgia State student run station, which was WREK. And they played all kinds of interesting stuff all the time. Sometimes it would like veer off into like John Cage or something like that. But it was also just like a healthy dose of what you would expect from college radio, like indie rock kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just like, I don't know, just always being interested in different kinds of music and everything. I think it just sort of hooked me. That show, The Breaks, especially, I don't remember how I first heard it, but it was a big inspiration for me.
Did you start going to shows, or did you just first start like watching other DJs, or did you just first start, you know, amassing a collection?
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't really have much of an idea of what I was doing when I started DJing. Like, I had the turntables, and I was, like, getting records, but it obviously takes a long time to build up a collection. So it was just sort of like playing with the same five or six records a lot for a long time. I got, like, a fake ID when I was 17. So at that point, then I actually got to go out and see, like, what real DJs actually did.
Mm-hmm.
And try to sort of figure it out. It wasn't like just observing a DJ, you can't always tell what they're doing all the time.
Right.
So
right.
It wasn't really till I got to college and I started meeting other people that DJed that I really got good at it, I guess I would say, and like started actually knowing what to look for and what to do and how a DJ worked.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you starting college with that specific goal in mind? Like, did you specifically pick a college that would advance that? Or was it just something that you were like, I'm going to go to school and study, and this will be something I'm going to do after hours?
Yeah, probably the second, where it was just sort of, it wasn't like a main focus of what school I was going to go to. Although, like, I wound up at the University of Georgia, which is in Athens, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Which you couldn't be in a better place for just sort of being immersed in music and around musicians all the time. Sometimes it feels like every third person there is involved in music in some way. So I met a lot of great people there and like really honed the craft and learned what I was doing. And I worked in college radio because, you know, obviously being inspired by that show at Georgia that was airing from Georgia Tech, I was like, I want to do that when I get to college. So first chance I got, I went to the radio station and signed up. And luckily I was able to get a show after the first semester. Did a show it was more of like an electronic music show. Wasn't as much hip hop inspired. I wound up doing college radios for basically like the entire 3.5 years I was there. So,
mm-hmm. And then once you graduated, what was kind of the next step? Were you like, okay, this is it. Like, this is what I want to do. Or were you still thinking like day job and, you know,
Yeah, I was still thinking day job. And like a lot of people, well, I mean, yeah, once I got done with school, once I graduated college, I didn't think I would ever do radio again, just because I wasn't really interested in having one of those radio jobs where you're just the voice and like someone else gets to pick the music and you're just there for the breaks, basically. That wasn't like that, the part of it that I really enjoyed. So yeah, like a lot of people that moved to LA, I came out here in search of work in the film and TV business. I moved here in the fall of 2002. I moved to LA. And it just sort of, like a lot of people, just worked my way up from being a PA. And I thought that film and TV was really the direction I wanted to head in initially. And as much as I love music, I didn't really see it as a viable option for me to like make a living, just because in terms of what I'm qualified for, what I can actually do, it's basically just DJing. I don't play any instruments or anything like that. And I'm not really all that interested in the business side of it, I guess. So yeah, it didn't really seem like a viable option to carve out a living with, but I was really interested in film and TV and worked my way up from being like an office PA to being a set PA to being an assistant editor. And after being in the night editor for a couple of years, made my way to being just like the regular full-time editor. You know, that was something that if you had told me 4 years prior, it would have felt like a dream come true. But I realized pretty early on that it wasn't really what I wanted to do, and I didn't really feel as much creative satisfaction out of being an editor.
Was this for TV or commercials or movies? What was it?
I worked for the syndicated television arm of Warner Brothers.
Oh, okay.
And we were doing the department I was in was just editing promos for the TV shows.
Got it. Okay.
So it's kind of like
creative, but you're like very limited.
You are limited. And also it's like when you're working at that pace, because these are shows that they'll do like 200, 150 shows a year. You're really just trying to crank stuff out to get approval because you've got another show that you got to edit the next day. So
right.
It's a lot of just like sticking with what you know will get approved. And maybe once a year, like, you know, someone will be like, hey, the awards are happening. It's, you know, in like a month, maybe we should do something special. And we'll actually spend like a day or two working on a cool spot. But it's rare. And like with the content we had, you're kind of like hemmed in a little bit. Like there's only so much you can do with people yelling at each other or, you know, within the format. As much as I liked editing, it just wasn't something that I could picture myself being happy doing when I was a 40-year-old man or something like that, just being in a dark editing bay and waiting for notes from upstairs. And, you know, it's just something that I kind of realized I didn't want to do forever.
Right.
So at that point, it was just sort of like, well, what do you want to do? And, you know, the radio thing, I feel like once it sort of gets in you, it's hard to get out. And it was something that I always wished I had some other way to, I wished I had some outlet to do it at. Just living in LA, I was a big fan of what KCRW was doing. I was friends with Mario Cotto, and he does the Saturday nights right now from midnight to 3. I was like, hey, like, how did you get into it? And he was like, well, there's different ways, but the path I took was just volunteering at the station, putting together a demo. So I was like, all right, well, that's what I'm going to do. So sort of while I had like one foot out the door as an editor, I started just volunteering at KCRW every now and then. And it was just, I don't know, it's exciting being in that studio, just having listened so many times to all the different DJs and then finally like seeing them in person. And I don't know, it just sort of reignited that fire in me that I really wanted to do this again. So I started volunteering pretty hardcore at KCRW, which, you know, it's they have a really good volunteer program there. And it's not like people volunteer for events like every other week, or you can just sort of set your own schedule as far as how much time you're willing to give to it. And that's how a lot of the DJs there get their foot in the door, because that's the hardest thing, is just sort of getting started. But it's a great way to get your foot in the door in radio, I would say.
Did you feel any sort of fear or panic, like leaving? I know it obviously didn't, you know, fulfill you, but leaving that steady paycheck and that health insurance and, you know.
Definitely. And like, it wound up not really being my choice. Like, I kind of had an exit plan, but then our whole department wound up getting outsourced to an outside company in Florida.
Oh, wow.
Which was sort of a mixed blessing, because on the one hand, I was able to collect unemployment. But on the other hand, too, I was like, because I had my plan to sort of get out at some point, I was saving really aggressively.
Nice.
Because my plan was to just sort of, you know, not have to worry about a steady paycheck for a year or two while I try to figure out what it is I did want to do. But I was prepared. I mean, it is nerve-wracking not knowing where the money is coming from all the time. But I don't know. Maybe I was just stupid enough not to really think about it too much. But it all kind of, I had faith that within like a year or two, I could figure something out. And if nothing else, I could probably just go back to being a PA and maybe try a different route in the film and TV production tree.
Was it sort of case or W or bust kind of thing, or?
Yeah, because I mean, there's not, it's a, KCRW is pretty unique in that, you know, it is a station where the DJs get to pick what they want to play and have full control over it. I mean, there's probably maybe like five other stations that aren't, I mean, there's a few stations, but a lot of them are just like straight up college stations that are run by the students, and the students are the DJs. So yeah, I mean, it's a very specific niche that I sort of wound up in, but I don't know that there was any other options for doing that kind of show.
So what was the timeline after you kind of got your sort of golden parachute?
Well, so I was doing some freelance editing and then just doing like various other jobs, just to sort of like freelance jobs, just to sort of make it. So I was doing camera work, freelance editing, and then just DJing every now and then here and there. And all the while, just, you know, volunteering at KCRW. And I was at the station for probably about a year, maybe a year and a half, when I started working on my demo tape, which is basically, in radio terms, it's basically like an hour of what your show would sound like. And you would do reads and they would get a taste of like what kind of music you're into and like what you sound like on the mic and all that. So I was working on that, and it was right around the time that Nick Harcourt, who was the music director previous to Jason Bentley.
Right.
He was still at the station, but when he left, a bunch of stuff sort of shifted around, and I was sort of in the right place at the right time with kind of the right skills, and they gave me a shot. I was able to slide in Tuesday nights from midnight to 3. And that was sort of the beginning of it. And that was 2011, I believe.
So, yeah. Just curious about, I mean, obviously, for our listeners out there who don't know, like KCRW basically has like this massive global reach. You know, it is, you know, coming out of Santa Monica College, but it has started careers for countless number of artists and introduced a number of artists to the world that, you know, myself listening, I know, like, that was the first time I heard like Imogen Heap, and I was like, who the hell is this? You know, like amazing, incredible artist. Like, really, it's an honor to be asked to play there. And like I said, it usually is like a jetpack for your music career to get on KCRW.
Yeah, I mean, not always, but it has happened. I mean, you know, there's a lot of artists like Adele or Beck or, you know, Coldplay. These are all groups that kind of got their first, at least North American plays on KCRW. So just for anyone that's not familiar, KCRW is a public radio station, and we have a show called Morning Becomes Eclectic from 9 o'clock to noon. And they'll often have, probably two or three times a week, they'll have live performances on that show. But otherwise, it's talk during the day. And from starting at 8 o'clock till 3 o'clock in the morning, we do music. The great thing is they give us free rein as DJs to sort of program the shows as we see fit. So a lot of times that means like I'll get someone emailing me something at like 6 o'clock, and then by 10:15 it's on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of gives us leeway to take a lot of chances and put on a bunch of interesting acts, or acts that at least excite us as DJs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you know, the Morning Becomes Eclectic has the live performances, but you got to give credit to, you know, the night crew as well, because, you know, you guys have also supported and, you know, kickstarted a lot of careers.
Oh, for
just,
sure.
Just with support and interest and enthusiasm. So,
and just sort of, you know, giving artists who you wouldn't normally hear on the radio an outlet for to be broadcast for other people to hear. I mean, obviously coming from the point of view where I came from, where I wasn't really exposed to a lot of this underground music, and then hearing that show, The Breaks, on WREK all those many years ago, it meant so much to me just to be able to discover these new acts that I wouldn't even know where to start, or even like know how to find out anything about the genre before I started listening to them. So,
yeah,
you know, I kind of always have that in the back of my head, that as much as I feel like it might be old hand to me, it's probably new to somebody out there in the listening audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you, and I don't know if you can speak to this, but I'm curious, you know, there's some DJ schools like Scratch Academy, and I'm wondering if you happen to know about them and if that's something that you would recommend for somebody that wanted to be a DJ and maybe just didn't really know how else to start.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know too much about those schools, to be honest. I'm not really super familiar. I would say if you can't find somebody in your life that you know that's a DJ, maybe it's a good option. Because I, you know, speaking from personal experience, I was kind of spinning my wheels for a while when I had the turntables in high school and didn't really have much of an idea of what I was doing. But I think, like, you know, just with YouTube tutorials and everything, you might be able to get by doing those, but I can't really speak too much to the DJ schools because I'm not really super familiar with it.
Yeah, no worries. And actually that it's not a prereq, you know, to becoming a DJ. So I'm sure that's good news for a lot of people who maybe don't have the money, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could also just talk about the state of radio and of how music gets marketed and that type of thing, and in relation to kind of, you know, your bird's eye view from KCRW.
I think I have a bit of a skewed point of view because I've never really worked at any other kind of station other than one that sort of gave DJs free reign to play. So I've never really been involved in a station that was like, you have to play Iggy Azalea twice this hour or anything like that.
Right.
I hope those stations die out personally, but like,
yeah.
I always feel like for a station like KCRW that is taking chances and exposing people to new kind of music, there's always going to be a place for that. And there's always going to be a place for music curation, especially just because there's so many options that if you were just to drop in from another country and try to figure out, you know, what music is like here, you wouldn't, it would be hard to know where to start exactly with all the different genres. So I think it's always going to be helpful to have somebody there to sort of like pick out the best of the best and weed through everything. But as far as just like radio in general, I don't really know. I think it's going to be tougher and tougher just because everybody is their own programmer now.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be just like, I don't know how these stations that just play top 40 all the time are going to, how you can have multiple top 40 stations on the same radio dial. I think it's going to be tough for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, it's been a long time since I've been a fan of those kind of radio stations. So I may have just lost all perspective on it, to be honest.
No, I think, I mean, well, two things. One is that it's, I think what you're saying, it like kind of speaks to those big radio stations in general. And the fact that, like, you know, now we have Spotify and Rap Caviar, like we have these, there's not just one place where people are getting their music from. That's what I was curious about, kind of your outlook on that. Like as things kind of continue to kind of decentralize, you know, from the mainstream pop you know, I'm going to play these five songs in rotation for the next like right. 3 hours, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, that just seems so soul crushing, but I guess it's worked in the past. So maybe it can continue to work. I'm not really sure though.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the second question I would have is that, do you feel like artists today, because there's many more options than radio, that artists are getting kind of much more of a chance, you know, to have a platform to be heard? Or is it literally like there's so many platforms, it's just, there's almost like too much information or too many platforms out there?
It's probably a little combination of both, but I feel like any artist starting off, like, I mean, you look at the whole SoundCloud rap phenomenon, which is built entirely on one platform, and it's like not stuff that I can play on radio. Just for one thing, like the language is like so explicit that like I couldn't play 15 seconds of a Lil Xan song probably.
Right. It would just be beep. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, like things are just getting more decentralized. But in a way, that's good or bad. I mean, like, you could look at it, like, if you want to be the next Adele, it's probably going to be a lot harder because there isn't, like, the mainstream culture movement isn't as strong as it was, but there's a lot more little niches and pockets to find your audience in nowadays.
And how do you go about finding new music? Like, what's kind of your go-to platforms, or do you go to a lot of shows, or what does that look like?
A lot of it is just sort of word of mouth, what I hear about from friends or what I read about, like on different, there's probably 8 different music sites that I visit on a daily basis, more or less. So whatever they're talking about, like there's the big ones like Stereo Gum and Pitchfork, whatever they're writing about, I'll always check out. And I get sent a lot of stuff. I probably get between 50 and 60 emails a day. It's just sort of like music submissions. And a lot of times it's music publicists sending me stuff. Sometimes it's the artist directly, if I have a relationship with them or they don't have a publicist. So yeah, I would say probably like 70% of the show is stuff that I kind of find on my own. And then like the other 30% is stuff that is fed to me through that I get emailed basically.
So it sounds like you kind of get inundated. It must be, again, probably because, you know, there's so few stations like KCRW out there. So it's sort of like, you know, you become the main, you guys are sort of like the main gatekeepers to, you know, up and coming music acts.
Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't go as far as to say we're gatekeepers just because there are so many different outlets for artists. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, we are open to submissions out of the blue. And like a lot of my favorite music discoveries have been artists that I just have known nothing about. And I click on the link and it's incredible. That's sort of the feeling that I guess I'm always chasing whenever I'm listening to these music submissions. And I do, like, not saying I'll listen to like all 5 minutes of a song if I'm not enjoying it, but I do listen to everything that I get sent just for FOMO, really, because there's been a lot of instances where I might read the description and it'll be like, oh, such and such is like an alt folk whatever, and that's not really something that I would normally be into, but there have been instances where I've been blown away by that kind of track, so I'll always like listen to everything for at least like 30 seconds or so just to make sure I'm not missing out on something.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm sure people who've submitted are really happy to hear that.
Yeah.
How do you promote yourself? Just as now as a DJ, do you feel like you're now sort of a certain brand type? I mean, I'm saying that because, as you know, there are DJs that pushing outside whatever radio show or whatever to sort of expand their brand and promote and maybe, you know, have shows or that type of thing.
I have not been very good at marketing myself, I would say, probably. And I don't, it's not something that I feel comfortable with. I mean, it's just sort of, I stayed busy enough with work outside of the station that I have not been very aggressive, to be honest, about going for even more than that. Yeah, I do feel like I am in, you know, probably the public perception is I am in like a certain kind of boxes, like a radio DJ. That's really what people would think of me more as.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that now there is that opportunity, if you so chose, that didn't exist before? Like, do you feel like DJs have kind of been more elevated?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so, but I would say more than anything, there's just a lot of opportunities to DJ in a city like Los Angeles, especially during the summertime when every pool party will have a DJ. There's just a lot of opportunities for DJs to get work. Basically, every wedding I've ever been to has either a DJ or a band. And I would definitely say that having a platform like the radio, where a lot of people are familiar with me and sort of my taste, I probably have a leg up on the average Joe Blow DJ out there trying to get work, just because people will reach out to me and be like, hey, do you want to do our party or whatever? So in that respect, yeah, it helps a lot just to sort of have some name recognition out there.
If somebody wasn't, you know, in LA and like wanted to get started, is it one of those things that you just, in terms of getting work, would it be one of those things basically trying to network about parties and weddings and stuff like that? Do you feel like that's a good way to start?
Yeah. I mean, weddings are very much their own specific kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like a wedding is completely different than what you would probably normally do in a club, at least in my experience. I mean, I'm sure there's other experiences out there that it's very similar, but whenever you're doing weddings, you definitely are like, I'm a lot more risk averse, and
right.
I try to just play like crowd pleasers, so it'll be like a lot of Justin Bieber and Bruno Mars and Justin Timberlake kind of stuff, just because.
Right.
Even though the host of the parties, or the host of the wedding, which is usually the bride and the groom, will have good taste, like their cousins and aunts and uncles, moms and dads, don't necessarily want to hear like the new thing going on in the underground. They want to hear tried and true Michael Jackson,
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, the good part about that DJing weddings is it usually pays a lot better than a club gig would.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of a creative choice that you have to make. Like, on one hand, if you want to be a working DJ, you do kind of need to do those kind of gigs, even though they might not be the most creatively fulfilling. But on the other hand, if you just want to be like, I'm going to do my thing and, you know, people are either on board or they're not, then a wedding probably isn't going to work for you. But you can still carve something out, like just try to find your scene, I guess, and just figure out if there are other people that are into the same kind of music you are, and try to get on the bills if there's already parties that are happening. One of the main lessons is just to be assertive, not necessarily pushy, but just, you know, let people know what you want and try to break through the barriers to get there. Yeah, just try to figure out where other people that do your kind of thing, where they are. Not saying you need to like follow the pack or anything, but it's something that's working for them. Versus if you were to go on SoundCloud, it is very inundated. I kind of somewhat gave up on SoundCloud a couple years back, just because there's just so much content on there that it's hard to sift through everything.
I kind of felt the same way. Yeah.
It's difficult for music discovery, but I do think it's a great platform for, like, I like getting links to SoundCloud to listen to stuff, just because mm-hmm. it's a lot easier than getting a Spotify link or anything else, just because it's a free format and you can access it on your phone. So I would recommend it for that. I mean, look, I would say it's good to just put your music on all the different platforms if you're an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And just try to figure out what is working and what's not working for you. But I think it's good to have something on Bandcamp and good to have something on SoundCloud. Like, a lot of these places don't cost money if you're under a certain number of songs. So,
and probably actually, you know, sort of finding, I think for artists too, sort of finding these kind of free agent DJs too. Do you know what I mean? As another way to kind of share your music with them and get some exposure and, you know, help them out kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, like I said, the biggest thrill that I get and the thing that I'm always chasing there'll be times that I'm going through like 60 straight emails without finding anything I like. I just feel like I have to ask myself, am I just in a bad mood or is everything just not sounding right today or what? But
right.
When I do come across that one thing that's sort of like reignites a spark, and it just sort of reminds me all over again of like, yes, this is why I'm listening to all this stuff, so I can get the feeling of listening to this kind of song.
That's cool. The last question, I'm just curious about what's your take on Spotify and how it's sort of become the dominant platform for, you know, emerging artists, et cetera, and just about their sort of playlists and things like that. Just curious what your opinion is.
I mean, it does seem like Spotify is kind of leveling the playing field, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not like a heavy Spotify user, but I know most people are. Most people are either on Spotify or Apple Music, but I don't know. It does seem like it's a great way, it's format for undiscovered artists to get discovered by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that sort of makes that happen, I'm all for.
That's great. And any opinion about the Apple Radio, or is it kind of the same thing, you know, with the Beats one and that type of thing?
You know what? I don't actually have an Apple Music subscription.
Yeah, I don't either. I got so annoyed
weird,
when they first rolled it out. I was like, God, because, you know, it's like me and everybody else has iTunes, and they kept pushing it so much. I think I just rebelled and went to Spotify because I was like, stop it. Every time I'd open iTunes, you know, they were pushing
it. You know what? The one change that I am very nervous about is, did you see in the news that Apple's going to stop accepting album submissions for iTunes?
No. Wow. That's it? Like no EP, no album?
Apparently, yeah. I don't know about EPs, but it definitely just said like no more albums. So I don't know how that's going to change things, because I do definitely, there are certain artists that I can't either get in touch with or find on the internet, and I'll just buy it on iTunes, and I guess it's all going to be driven toward Amazon maybe now. I'm not really sure, but hopefully we're not seeing the end of the album.
That's crazy, because it's funny, like when I came out with my EP, the only reason I made it an EP versus an album was because it was like, that was the limit for iTunes. It was like 6 songs. Otherwise,
really?
It would
How
be
long ago was it?
This was like last year.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it sounds
like. And what would happen if you exceeded the 6?
Then it was automatically an album.
And they took a bigger chunk.
They designated it. No, not necessarily. No, but they just designated it. Like, it was like they determined.
Oh, okay.
EP or album. Yeah, I couldn't be like, you know, it's a 7. You know, single EP.
Yeah,
like, no,
mini
album.
LP.
Do you know what
something.
I mean? Yeah. It was like, that's why I was like, all right, I guess it's an EP kind of thing. They kind of just dictated it. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's what they're continuing kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I mean, like, how do you feel about Spotify?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's the best. And
both as an artist. A listener?
Yes. I'm grateful as an artist that it's like they take my music and it's not like all these bells and whistles or gatekeepers. And I've discovered amazing artists through, you know, their Discover Weekly and their various playlists. And my guest that I just had on, she works in marketing and she's part of John Legend's team. And she was saying that Rap Caviar was like, that's what every rap artist is fighting to get on is the Rap Caviar playlist in Spotify.
Yeah.
Like that's the list to get on to be, you know, discovered, blown up, et cetera. And I was like, holy shit. So, and I'm sure they're evil in some way, but I just don't, I don't know yet. And I don't kind of want to know yet. So I'm just sort of blissfully ignorant, but I love them so far. They've done me no wrong. So
it also, just from, you know, anecdotally from what I've heard, like if you're an artist with a pretty deep catalog, it's almost better just to have it up on Spotify than to try to sell physical copies of your album, just because, you know, even though the pay per play is fairly minuscule, like if you can make up for it with volume, it's can go a long way.
Yeah. And especially because, as you know, obviously like physical is on its way out. So,
yeah.
Do you think vinyl's going to make any, maybe like a kitschy comeback? Or, I mean, obviously I know it had a resurgence, but do you see it like continuing or just kind of fading out again?
I don't know. I mean, I am currently selling a bunch of vinyl on Discogs because I realized how much certain things that I own I could sell for.
Yeah, they were like worth a lot now, right?
Yeah, like just like 12 inches that I bought not even like 5 years ago for maybe $12. I was able to flip for like 75. So
wow.
All right, I'd rather have
That's
the
amazing.
Money than the record. So it does kind of feel like a bubble to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just like people are discovering vinyl and it's like cool now. And then maybe in 5 years, people are going to be like, hey, you know what's a really cool format is CDs. Like they're so compact and you can they're portable. I mean, I think CDs are definitely going to come back around, but
yeah,
vinyl is like a superior format, but if we're being honest, it's also kind of a pain in the ass.
Well, again, like you have one place to listen to it. Like it's not taking your record player in the car and or the beach.
Yeah, you
or
can't
something.
Listen to it in your car. You can't, I don't know. And like at this point, like I really hate how like a new LP, if you go to the record store, it's like $28 now. To me, that is just like absurd. But
yeah,
I guess, I mean, it feels a lot like the end of CDs right before Napster happened, where they were trying to charge like $17 or $18 for a CD.
Yeah.
Which seems insane now, but that was like the way things were working back then. But
right.
Yeah, I definitely, the vinyl thing feels a bit like a bubble, but I think I'll always have some records and it'll always be a viable format. But I do think the days of it being sold at Urban Outfitters or Whole Foods are not long.
Yeah. And that's the vacuum. So it's like, what's going to fill kind of that vacuum? And the last guest I spoke with, we also talked about, you know, sort of the older generation that's what they still listen to. And chances are they have more disposable income. So how do you, if they're not on Spotify and they're not, you know, listening to KCRW, how do you reach them? You know? So it's it's really bizarre and interesting and a little scary too, because it's like, what's going to fill that? So.
Yeah. I mean, I think the key is if you're an artist is just try to like, you know, build your audience. Don't think of it in terms of like 500,000 people, but just like try to figure out how to get like a devoted group of 50 or 500 people to start like, you know, actively checking out anything that you put out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times that might mean a mailing list just so you have a little bit more control over it and you can be your own PR person essentially. But also, you know, obviously there's social media, Facebook, Twitter, you should be on all those things if you're an artist. And as somebody that doesn't like to sort of self-promote, I get it. Like, it sucks to have to do that for yourself, but unless you can hire someone else to do it, you kind of have to do that if you're trying to get exposure and trying to break through, because there's going to be like a certain subset of people that will discover you organically and they're going to be excited that they found somebody like you, but there's other people that aren't going to be searching that hard that you also need to find because they might also appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you do have to be assertive and kind of at least like maybe once a month for like 2 hours, put on like your self-promotion hat and like suck it up and act, pretend like you're somebody else and do it on your behalf.
But I love it. 2 hours. That's awesome. Here's my 2 hours on Twitter. Done. That's awesome. Well, speaking of self-promotion, do you want to, your shift is it 10 to midnight?
Yeah. So I do 10 to midnight Monday through Friday on KCRW, which is 89.9 if you're in LA. Otherwise you can find us online.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're streaming. We do the live stream on the KCRW.com website, or you could just find the show on demand. If you like search around a little bit, it's like, I think if you hit KCRW.com/Travis Holcomb, it'll redirect you to my show page.
Okay,
we also have the KCRW radio app, which is a free download, and you get all of our content there as well. So
cool. And
all kinds of different ways to check it out.
And I stalked you on Instagram, so people can follow you on Instagram, right? And you'll promote if you've got any events. You're 2 hours a month, you'll promote.
Yeah. Yeah, so on the social media things, just my name, Travis, and then last name is Holcombe. Usually something like that on all the social media stuff. But yeah, I'm not as good at social media as I probably should be, because I'm good at telling other people what to do, but I'm not good at doing it myself. But
that's all right. You got a radio show, man. You're like, you know, you don't need to. You're all good.
Well, yeah.
So, well, thank you so much, Travis. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, I enjoyed talking to you too. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, big ups to Travis for taking the time to be with us today and to share with us his knowledge and to put up with all of my annoying questions. And you can find Travis at kcrw.com, streaming worldwide live between 10 p.m. and midnight, or if you're in LA on the FM dial, 89.9 FM. And you can also find him on social media platforms like Instagram and Twitter. And I'm sure his 2 hours a month, he will post about events he's got going on around town. So definitely check them out if you have a chance. Okay, this is episode 20. Woohoo! 20. I feel so grown up. 20 episodes. And again, I couldn't have done it without you guys. I'm very, very appreciative of all the support and love to my guests, to my listeners. And we just keep getting better and better. And I so appreciate, again, all the love. And we're just going to keep on trucking, right? So again, I'm your host, L. Ariel. You can find me and my musical blitherings at lariel.com. That's lariel.com. I'm also on social media at lariel music. So come on and say hi. And listen, have a wonderful week. Be back next week for just more amazing guests to drop knowledge. And what are we going to do? We're going to keep on hustling. We're going to pursue that dream, and we are not going to give up.